Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
This verse, God is love, was the first Bible verse that I ever learnt. In those days, we were encouraged to learn Bible verses, and this one I've never forgotten. The second verse that I learned, I was very pleased about, because it is the shortest verse in the Bible, and thus rather easy for a four-year-old to learn. It is found in the Gospel of John, and says very simply, Jesus wept. The context being the account of the death of Lazarus. At the time, the words of these verses meant very little to me as a four-year-old. They were just convenient verses to quote when a memory verse was required. And it helped that we would be rewarded with a little coloured sticker, much prized in those days when we had so few personal possessions. It was not till many years later that I realised that these two simple verses contained the whole truth of the gospel message, and indeed the reason why we meet here this morning. If God is love, then logic tells us that the corollary is also true. That is, love is God. Where there is love, God is present. The Epistle of John tells us that no one has ever seen God. But if we love one another, God lives within us. Of course, John is talking of the love that is defined by actions, not just happy thoughts and nice feelings. God so loved you and I that he came down to earth in the form of Jesus in order to rescue us from the consequences of sin. In the parable, the Good Samaritan got down from his donkey, bound up the wounds of the Jewish traveller, and paid for his ongoing care out of his own pocket. We too are called to the love that inspires us to action. My second verse tells of Jesus' reaction as Mary tells him of the death of Lazarus, who was the brother of Mary and Martha and a close friend of Jesus. The tears were not for his own grief or for Lazarus. Jesus knew that Lazarus would rise from the dead. Jesus wept in sympathy with Mary and Martha. He showed very human emotions, and we are assured that when Jesus walked on this earth, he shared our joys and our sorrows. He felt our fears and our pain. As we come to remember Jesus through the bread and the cup, we have the assurance that he understands our human frailties and we can bring everything before him. We also have the assurance that if we come with love in our hearts for those around us who we can see, then we will be in the presence of God who we cannot see.
Thank you for this morning, and thank you, team. Can I borrow that? Is that fine? You know what? Are you here on your own today, MJ? Josh is here? He's at the back outside with Zeb. It's tough sometimes coming, you know, with your little one, and worship leading on your own. And I just want to say, I really honor you. Thank you. And thank you, Danielle, for coming and grabbing little Zeb wherever she is. That's community to me, like helping one another out and just seeing what's needed. And I had a little word for you, actually, and I'll give it to you after. Yeah, it's good. Sorry, the switch came down. I got it. Thank you as well, Rod, for sharing this morning. 80 years. 80 years. Wow. It's awesome. All right. We're starting a new series. Hi, everyone. How are you? We're starting a new series, The Economics of Love. Jonathan, he loves Jonathan, call him Jonathan. He said, I hope you're doing Malachi, and you know, you can say, you've robbed God, and then I can point at everyone, cursed, cursed. So let's close in prayer. Don't be cursed. We're going through this series. Hopefully it's going to be meaningful. And I had this kind of burning question that I sort of wanted to start with, which is, why are you here? You were sat there thinking, yeah, I was just thinking that. Or maybe you were like, well, many years ago, it was Dad's birthday. And he looked at Mum, .. 9 months later, that's why I'm here. See how I kept it PG? That was awesome. And what I mean is, why are we here? I ask this question a lot. Why are we here? Why are we here as a church? What's the point? And it's not a fatalistic question. I don't want to play church. I don't. I'm not doing pastoring because I got nothing better to do. Neither is Kelly. Neither is anyone on this team. And anyone who is involved here, we've all got other things. So I feel like there's actually something about our community that we kind of like have asked that question, why are we here? And I don't know about you, but I, as a church, as a gathered church, I want to be the real deal. I want to play church. And, you know, is it possible? I think it's possible to come to church rather than be the church, to play church rather than live as a church. And I know for you, probably like me, you don't want to do the former. You don't want to come to church. You want to be the church. Is that true? Can we get a bit Pentecostal this morning? And if you say, think that's good, yeah. Oh, hallelujah. Ooh, thank you, sister. Can someone come and wipe my brow now? I need a brow wiper. You know, how do we become the real deal? How do we become the real deal? This has occupied my thoughts for many a day, and as it should, many a night. And I want to tell you a story just recently about something that happened last week. Abby's car broke down. My work days finish on Wednesday. I work part time here at West City, and her car broke down Wednesday night. That's my last day of work. I have Thursday off. And so she called and said, my car's broken down. And I was like, okay, well, where are you? She's like, all right, I'm all good. I got sorted, but it's just in front of someone's house. So on Thursday morning, I went with her to fix her little hand I gets that we bought for $30,000 that she has abused. She is not... Hey? Oh, did I say $30,000? $3,000, sorry. 6 years ago. You're like, oh, you get paid well at West City, eh? Yeah. $3,000 6 years ago, and it had 60,000 Ks on it. And they've gone up in value. Hyundai gets. I tried to get her another one. It was like, they're about $8,000 now with about 3 million miles on it. Anyway, she's not exactly looked after the car. And so there's been times where the oil was coagulated in the engine. There was nothing left in there. And I did an oil change and nothing came out. And it still kept going. And at 160 or 170,000, something went wrong. So we went, and I you know, thought, this is a teachable moment because she needs to. So I said to Abby, when something goes wrong in a car, there's three things, right? As a bushman mechanic, there's three things you look at, right? One is water, okay? Has it got water in it? The second one is fuel. Have you run out of fuel? And the third one is, you know, as well, oil, but spark. Has it got a spark, right? They're the three things I know. And after that, take it to a mechanic because we're stuffed. And so we went to, you know, order one or whatever, and the water looked like water, coolant. It looked like coolant. That's good. If it looks like oil in your water, not good. And if your, you know, oil looks like water as well, not good. So you shouldn't either look either way. But so we went to order one. I said, look, let's just buy spark plugs and leads. So we went there, and there was two options. One was like a knockoff version of spark plugs and leads, and it was cheap. And the other was the real deal, and they were more expensive. And I said to Abby, if you want a spark to last in your car, right, you can't buy the cheaper knockoff stuff. You got to buy the NGK. You got to buy the real deal because this is what will help you go for a long time. And, you know, it's the same for us, you know, as a church. We want to be the real deal. We can't just settle for, like, the knockoff stuff. We can't just play church. We actually have to pay the price sometimes, I think, to actually have a spark that's going to sustain us a long time. Do you see how I did that? That's so brilliant, wasn't it, that story? Spark that sustains, shut up, John, sustain us for a long time. And the question begs itself to me, what is it to be the real deal? What is it to be the church? You know, the church that Jesus gave us a picture of in the Sermon on the Mount that we've just finished, he said, hey, you'll be like a city on a hill that cannot be hidden, where tired and broken travelers will see you and find refuge. This was the picture. And be able to come and be healed up and restored and understand what it is to be fully human, created in God's image, image bearers. You'll be salt and light. That's the picture of being the real deal. But how do we do it? Are we doing okay? That's the question. What's the litmus test? How do we know? As I said, I've thought long and hard about this, and as I should, really. You know, if you're going to be a part of a church, you should think, what do we need to, what's the sign of being, you know, to having that spark, to being genuine? And I think a good start to answer that is to look at the fledgling church in Acts. Now, Acts, the church in Acts, weren't saints, like in the sense of they weren't perfect, right? Can you all say amen to that? I mean, there was dodgy stuff. But they were people who were coming from all walks and all places and all stations of life, and they were trying to work this thing out. You know, we're a part of Churches of Christ, and the early founders of the Churches of Christ said, how do we, again, they were asking the question, how do we be the real deal? How do we have something that's close to God's heart? That's what Jesus meant when he talked about it. And they said, hey, maybe we need to look at the early church and see what they did and they practiced and kind of like follow them as they follow Jesus. So this morning, In this message about reimagining possession through the common person, the economics of love, I want to start at this point by looking in Acts chapter 2. And I want to read to you this verse that I've mulled over and over and over and looked at, even in our old church, when we pioneered our old church at 30 years of age, I looked at this from a different perspective, and I'll share that this morning with you. I'll share some of my faults as a young leader wanting to be like Brian Houston. Anyway, I did. Anyway, here it is, Acts chapter 2. And I'm reading from the Amplified Version. Acts chapter 2, verse 42. And I'll read through a little bit later the whole thing. But let me read this bit to you, the first bit I want to start. It says, they were continually and faithfully devoting themselves to the instruction of the apostles and to fellowship, to eating meals together, and to prayers. And I start here by saying, they continually and faithfully devoting themselves to dot, 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 dot. Because the first thing that really strikes me about this, and it's something that I think we believe in, is that no one can make you grow. That's your opportunity. And no one should make you. It didn't say the disciples made them grow, made them devoted. The disciples put a guilt trip on them. The disciples said, Malachi, you'll be cursed. It says they said, we want to be a part of this thing, the church. And they devoted themselves to a bunch of things. But it's not rocket science stuff. And I love that. I love it because a child can do it and should be able to get it, as well as a professor. And it's not in the knowing of this, it's in the doing, as Rod has talked about. It's not a love that kind of just spouts knowledge. It's a love that's a verb that does something about it. It's a love we see in God and we reciprocate. So what did they devote themselves to? And what are you devoting yourself to at the moment? I know it's a bit of an old-fashioned word. When was the last time you used the word devote? Hello, wife. I'm devoted to you today. I don't know when you used it, but I like that. They gave themselves. So what did they give themselves? Let's get on with it. It says, to the instruction of the apostles and to fellowship, to eating meals together, and to prayers. Well, the first one, you say, well, no one can make me grow, it's my opportunity, but didn't the apostles tell them what to think? No. The apostles were literally saying, this is what Jesus taught us how to live. We want to share that with you. That's what they were doing. They were disseminating the teachings of Jesus. They were saying, this is kind of what we received, and we want to live it out. We want to share it with you. That's why every year we look at the Sermon on the Mount, because we don't want to come up with fancy twists on Lazarus climbed a tree and the branch he was on was oak tree branch. I don't think there's oak trees England. He was in England. It was, and the leaf shape, and there was five shapes, and those five leaves mean da-da-da-da-da about the God. And it's like, we just want to do what Jesus has already said that we should do. And so they were just sharing the teachings of Jesus and trying to work it out and live it in community. Man, that's enough, right? I mean, that can take your whole life doing that stuff. But it then says, they fellowshipped. And again, here's another weird word. And I could use the word koinonia, or, you know, but it just meant they hung out with each other. But it was a radical hanging out, because you had people from every station in life, every nation, and slave, free, Greek, Roman, foreigner, Jew, Gentile, male, female, they hung out with each other. And all those titles that, you know, talk about, that they people use as status, I'm in and you're out, that people use for hierarchy, I'm a man, you're a lowly woman. It says in Timothy that all those were given away because the name of Christ Jesus was the name that everyone was named by. And if Christ accepts you, then we accept you. And we're trying to live this, aren't we, at West City? This radical welcome of Jesus, wherever you're from and whoever you are. That, yeah, we have titles to show us what you do, but they never tell us that you're better and someone's worse. So they hung out and they shared meals. And I love it because the start is that they devoted themselves to these things, but the rest of the stuff it lists here are all community building activities. Fellowship, friendship, hanging out, being and seeing one another. It's a community building activity. You say, how could this make us a real deal? I'll get to it in a minute, but I think it does. It's important. And it says, here's the other profound thing. They ate meals together. Wow. Anyone not have to eat? Give me a wave. I love that because, you know, often in church, it's like, well, what's the spiritual thing I need to do that I need to add to my already busy life? And I love this because it's like, I always have a meal. And I could open that up to someone else and share a meal with them. It's amazing what information passes over a meal, don't you reckon? Over pizza and over burger and what you do. You get to know one another, you get to see one another, you get to hear their stories. I'm going somewhere with this. I'm going somewhere with this. Hang in with me. They shared meals. And you may have noticed if you're new to West City, we have a lot of meals. Welcome to West City dinner, pilgrimage dinner, hangout dinner, 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 dinner. And we do it for a reason, right? We do it because actually this is how we get to see and hear and spot one another and welcome one another. And it's so, we've learned this because there's a meal that we've learned it from. There's a meal that Jesus welcomes us to that says, come one and all, come as you are, change as you go. You'll be transformed by me. I love you. And I love the iconography of when, in the Old Testament, when the Abraham welcomed the visitors. There's this beautiful icon. And this in this icon, you have the Father, Son, and Spirit, and you have Abraham, and you have this spare seat. You can look it up. And it's a beautiful picture of there's always a place in God's table for you. So that's why we have meals. And I think that's why they shared their meals as well. Also, it had a practical aspect. People were literally hungry. And so others said, we will feed you. In fact, one of the things that one of the emperors hated about the church and he wrote about, he said, those despicable, horrible Christians not only feed their poor and hungry, but ours as well. Terrible. Wow. What an amazing testimony to have someone be mad at you about. You feed people too much. You care. And then it says they shared meals together and prayers. So, you know, this idea of community, they didn't just think community with one another was important so we get to see and share and welcome anyone, regardless of rich or poor or whatever. But we need community with Jesus. There was a deep desire to respond to the invitation to be in community with God, the Father, and the Son, and the Spirit. And it's important because it was important to them, it should be important to us, I think. They got to hang out with Jesus, and as a result, resurrection life flowed into them and into their community. When was the last time you hung out with Jesus? He loves you. He wants to hang out with you. Whenever I used to hang out with my friends, some of them were bad back in England. And when I got home, my mum would say, "You've been hanging out with Adrian Kane again, haven't you?" I was like, "How do you know?" Like, "Just, I don't know, something on you. Something a bit weird about you. You're a bit shifty, Phil." I'm like, "Oh, my mum was a prayer. I was scared. I was like, oh my gosh, she knows things." And the same is true when you hang out with Jesus. You kind of go home like him, kind of walk around like him, but it's not in a shifty, horrible way. Maybe that illustration didn't land quite well. It's a beautiful way. And then we read on this amazing thing, and I'll just read it. It's very small writing. But I think this was a result of them devoting themselves to this idea of community, community about living out Jesus' words, community about sharing meals and seeing one another and welcoming people to the table, community about community with the Lord and with each other in prayer. This was what happened. It says, "A sense of awe was felt by everyone, and many signs and wonders and attesting miracles were taking place through the apostles. And all those who had believed in Jesus as Savior were together and all had all things in common, considering their possessions to belong to the group as a whole. And they began selling their property and possessions and sharing their proceeds with all the other believers as anyone had need. Day after day they met in the temple area, continuing with one mind and breaking bread in various private homes. They were eating their meals together with joy and generous hearts, praising God continually and having favor with the people. And the Lord kept adding to their number daily those who were being saved." As they practiced those simple, basic, beautiful things, this sprung up amongst them. They were filled with awe. Oh, have you ever seen a little kid filled with awe? It's beautiful. Remember when you... the day Christmas died for you and you saw mum and dad putting the presents under the tree and you're like, "A part of me just died." Oh, sorry, if you still think, damn. And some of you will be like 10 years time, you'll be like, "And part of me died that day, Phil, in church. Thank you." But filled with awe, and Jesus showed up in powerful ways. A mate of mine said to me the other day, "Something special bubbles away at West City." And I was like, we chatted about it. And I feel like sometimes, you know, we think signs and wonders is like, you know, just healing and stuff. But there's other beautiful ways Jesus shows up. And he says they shared what they had, so no one was in need. They started to share what they had. Now, this is kind of what we'll be looking at this month in our economics of love. It says they continued to share life over meals, and I've said people join them in their pilgrimage of following Jesus. They didn't have to evangelize, stand on the street and shout at people. People wanted to get in on community where Jesus was. I used to read this second part and used to think, this was as a young pastor, and used to think, how do you get people to do this? Like, you know, no one in need and like, you know, power and miracles and, you know, getting tons of people into church. I mean, I had selfish motives, I did. I wanted to be on the preaching circuit, rubbing shoulders with all the mega pastors. That really worked out well. But I also, you know, how do you get people? That's where I came from. And then one day, as I began to look at the things of Jesus and start just to go, "Oh, Jesus, I'm sick of all your stuff. I just want to follow you. Like, how do we get back to you?" It dawned on me that all these things are a result of people committed to loving one another. they all spring up out of it. And let me remind you of Jesus' words. When asked what was the greatest commandment, he said, love God and love people. And then he said this incredible thing in Matthew. He said, all the law and the prophets hang on these things. And it's worthwhile reminding us all today about the words of Jesus there. If you love God, who, by the way, first loves you and is deliciously irresistible, he loves you, and you love others, everything else you read in the law and the prophets and the scriptures hangs on this. So I want to show you. No, I'm not going to hang, don't worry. I'm going to show you something. This, Jesus says, all the law and the prophets hang on people in community loving one another. And when you hang something on something, it has form and it has shape. And Jesus is like, you're okay. You'll actually get it okay if at the core, the skeleton, the coat hanger, is you committing to loving each other. But if you take away that which it hangs from, take away love, you can end up with deformed mess. And, you know, so often in church, we've made it about morality, or we've made it about ticking these boxes, or we've made it about this is what matters. And Jesus said, no, all of this hangs on loving one another. You know, that's why we talk so much about love here at West City. That's why Rod shared that beautiful message around, you haven't seen God, but if you love people, you are loving God. And if you are loving people, God loves us. God is loving us, and we're encountering him. So when I come back to Abby's story, apparently there's a fourth thing, spark, fuel, water. It's called compression. And apparently there's a thing called a timing belt. And when that lets go, the pistons do things while the valves are doing other things, and it's not good. And apparently engines need compression to run on, apparently. And so a mechanic told us that. And her car was written off because it only cost $3,000, not $30,000. And so we jumped into action to help Abby out, right? To find her another car. We did it because we love her. Now, you might say, well, you know, you're a parent, so you have to. No, we don't. She's 26, you know. She can just go on her own. But we love her. And what I mean by love is this. This is what I mean by we love her. This is not sentimentality, because we... Hello, excuse me. This is not sentimentality. It's a real love Rob's talking about. We love her because we know her. We know her journey. We know her story. We've sat across meals from her. We've listened to her cry as she's broken up with her boyfriends. She hasn't had tons of them. You know, we've seen her buy a house and try and handle a mortgage. We've seen her try and make her way in the world. We see her and we hear her and we have compassion for her as a result. And so, as a result of that, we help her find another car. And we dig into our pockets to support her. And this is the economics of love. This is what can happen in a community when we see each other and hear each other's stories. And we're not just about sitting next to one another on a Sunday, but actually genuinely saying, how can I love and walk with you? The result of that is that when someone's in need, we know, we feel it. If they hurt, it hurts us. And not just that, we end up thinking, I can do something about that, if you can. This is the beautiful thing about our common purse. You know, a few years ago, and for those of you who are here, I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago, I realized, came to a realization that we do a lot of these things really good, really well. And I think as a result, Jesus is here. But I realized we didn't have like a purse or something where we could share the resources, our resources with one another. And so, remember, I came and we chatted about this, didn't I? And I said to those who were here, and can I tell you, I was actually a bit scared. Because, again, in the back of my mind, there's this question about, why are we here? Are we really wanting to be the church? And so, I read in Acts, we read about they had a common purse. And I was like, hey, why don't we have like a reverse offering? That we have, you know, I used to think as a kid when the thing came by, I used to think, I'd love to take some money out. And that's exactly what the early church had. They had a thing where if you were in financial need, of course, let's help. Because sometimes we don't know what's going on, and so let's just have a common purse where we can just help. And in those need, moments of need and crisis, we can help one another. And so I remember I came to the church and I said, I'd love to do this. And you know, the beautiful thing, we all were like, yeah, we want to do it too. I'm so glad, actually, because I reckon I'd have just been like, oh. It would have been a bit. I would ask the question, are we really wanting to be the church? Everything given to the common purse goes to others. Everything. There's not a handling fee. You know, I don't take my 20%. Everything is there for when we are in a time of need. And I was so blessed. Now, do you know, I did some like math on the back of a dirty handkerchief. And since we started, we've given over $100,000. Little old us. And over the next 3 weeks, you're going to hear stories of how we've been able to help people, but not in a way like, look how great we are, and exposing them. We'll just be sharing bits and pieces, but not only locally, globally. So for those of you who don't know what the common purse, imagine it's how we travel in community with one another in this particular way. It's the economics of love for us. It's us going, I'm going to put something in for when others need to take something out. In that moment, when Abby went through her moment, she had two or three things go wrong for her, and I could see her at breaking point. Many of you maybe have known people or been at that point, a breaking point, where just you don't need to hear, be blessed and in peace and go your way. You want to be like, I'm going to bless you and bring peace. And help you on your way. Amen? And that's what this does. We do it in secret. Because Jesus said, do it. Don't shout about it. So I want to say to you, West City Church, good on you. Thank you. Thank you for being the real deal. Thank you for having the spark that I think is going to last us another 80 years, Rod. No. For those listening to the podcast, Rod said, not me. Here's how we can prepare for when we chuck all our money in the pot at the end of June. Firstly, pray. Pray and say, Lord, help me to see with new eyes. Enlarge my heart for others. Just pray about it. Just invite Jesus into that space. Just have a chat with him about it. Then look, start to look around. Many of you looked this year, you started seeing people and needs and stuff, but just look with new eyes. Just look at the person near you and see them as someone Jesus has welcomed into this community. But maybe we don't know all their story, but you may find out as we walk together. But look with new eyes of compassion. Then live. What I mean by that, I think we stole this from Tia, but this idea is this, Tia organization. I like this. Sometimes, you know, like actually giving something significant. In the early church would do this. They would fast. Part of their fasting was so they could share their food with others who needed it more than them. And the idea of living is this. What would it be like to not eat out for a month and all that money go into the purse for others? Or maybe not buy the car, the new car this year. Abby, the new car this year. Buy next year and give what you would have given. Here's the thing. This is a stretch, our common purse. We ask everyone to try and stretch. This is not about, I'll throw $5 in. And here's a suggestion. I say unapologetically, because I get embarrassment so about, hey, we need support here at West City to keep the lights on and pay my wage. And that's this stuff I don't give a rip about. Give a lot, all right? I can go there. I want to suggest a day's wage up to a week. And if you want to give more than that, knock yourself out. That's how we have significant amounts to help those in need. Because how many know we live in Perth, Western Australia, and often when we're in need, it's not cheap need. And further afield, when we give to our global partners and people we are in relationship with, that goes a long way to absolutely changing communities and lives. So, I'm going to read from Rod's communion talk as we come as an ending. We also have the assurance that if we come with love in our hearts for those around us who we can see, we will be in the presence of God who we cannot see.
How good was that message? Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. So we will go out and feed the hungry, go out and clothe the naked, go out and fight for justice, go out and end oppression, go out and proclaim anew the old, old story, go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us. His name is Jesus.